It's time for the Hockey Writers Grindline, a weekly show covering everything Detroit Red Wings. Brought to you by our own iconic top line of Wings writers. Sit back and enjoy the grind.
Welcome to the Hockey Writers Grindline. I'm your host, Pat Brown. Joining me, as always, are my line mates, Devin Little and Kyle Knott. Boys, how you doing?
Excellent. Pretty good. Glad to be back.
Good. Well, the band is back together for two straight weeks now, which is some sort of record for us lately. So good stuff. And just a reminder for you at home, this week's show is being brought to you by Morning Skate, a daily newsletter delivered to your inbox Monday through Friday, jam-packed with the best hockey stuff on the planet. It's a daily dose of the latest NHL news, rumors, history, funnies, quizzes, etc., etc. Just a little hockey fun and information brought to you every day of the week from the Hockey Writers. You'll see a link down below in the show's description, so check it out. While you're down there, maybe toss us a like, and we're going to jump into the show because we've got a lot to talk about. Gentlemen, let's start off with an oldie but a goodie. One good, one bad, and there is plenty to talk about. As always, I'll kick it off super quick with my two cents. One good, and I feel like, I mean, there has to be a recurring theme here, but well, my good is going to be bringing Nicklas Lidström back into the organization. I don't know if you can find anything else good from the last week, to be honest. So I'm interested to hear what you guys have to say, but I don't want to get too far into it. We're going to talk about this in a little bit, but how great to see the perfect human back in the wing wheel, back in the Motor City. You knew he wouldn't stay away forever, and GM Steve Yzerman seized an opportunity to somehow make this front office even better. So that's my good. My one bad for the week, the Red Wings. The Red Wings are my one bad for the week. Really, not a whole lot of good to say, so I'm not going to waste any more time saying it, to be honest. Devin, we'll go to you next. One good, one bad from the week that was. What you got?
My one good, I do think there is something good from the week you can pull. There's a couple of things, actually. But the thing I'm going to latch onto is, and this kind of goes with something that you brought up last week, Kyle, Nedeljkovic had kind of cooled off. But the last couple of games, he's been the only reason why they've gotten a point or have been in the game. Mm-hmm. Ned has been on fire lately. So it's good to see that he's looking like the goalie that, you know, we were kind of getting excited about in the offseason. My bad, this isn't exclusively this week, but it obviously did continue into this week. Lucas Raymond, choo-choo. has not scored a goal.
I gotta say, that was a muted horn.
It was muted because, you know, because he hasn't been scored quiet a goal lately. Since December 1st.
Yep.
Homeboy needs to score a goal. Now, to be fair, he is still putting up points, and that's promising. That actually is encouraging for, you know, for him to be going through a slump but still putting up points. But you gotta hope he scores a goal soon. He's due.
Yep, absolutely. Last I checked, he's still leading rookies with 30 points, I think. So
that's kind of a testament to how good he started.
literally exactly what I was about to say. You figure what, they're 33 games in, he's got 30 points. So he's still almost a point per game, but good stuff. Kyle, coming to you, you get to bring us home on this. What do you got? One good, one bad for the week. Hit us with it.
Yeah, my one good for the week. You stole what I wanted to go with Lindstrom. I mean, he just was my favorite player to watch growing up and throughout my formative years of becoming a defenseman and watching his game. But on top of that, I'll also say that Larkin getting voted into the All-Star game was definitely a sign of good things to come. And I know we're going to talk about that in the next segment or two. So I'll just leave it at that. It's my good. My bad, and I apologize because this is on me. Was my microphone last week. It was just absolutely brutal. You know, I went back and watched the show on Sunday, and I was hurt that I failed you guys last week. So I just want to apologize to all our listeners out there. I hope my microphone is actually plugged in this week. But yeah, I'm going to take that L for last week.
Well,
still clear today.
I was going to say, Kyle, I bet your future wife, if she was watching, was like, where can I get that button to quiet him down? Good stuff. Well, didn't see that one coming. That was a good one, Kyle. All right. So we got a lot to talk about. We'll jump into some of the bad first, which let's talk about the Red Wings' recent winless streak. Is this a cause for concern? Are they simply regressing to the mean? You know, is Jeff Blashill's job in trouble? And I feel like we talk about this every other week, but it's become relevant yet again. Setting the stage for you at home, the Red Wings are 1-4-2 in their last seven games, and they've got seven goals over that span. They've been shut out twice. And as we all saw yesterday, they couldn't even score on a 6-on-3 power play. So, and I say yesterday, apologies, Thursday night against Winnipeg, for those who may be watching this on Sunday and saying, wait, they didn't play yesterday. Anyway, so back on track. Are you concerned about the winless streak? Are they regressing to the mean? And is Jeff Blashill's job in trouble? Really quickly to sound off, I don't want to say for my part it's a cause for concern. I would almost argue it's expected, and the Red Wings have been overachieving to this point in the season. So I kind of do believe, in fact, that they are regressing back to where they were expected to be. Over the course of a season, everything averages out. And these are things that are kind of averaging out. You've got the superstar rookies who are no longer flying under the radar. So there's a lot more attention. And guess what? The Red Wings still aren't that deep. So when you start shutting down those players, there's nowhere else to go. Is Jeff Blashill's job in trouble? Not this year. He's not going anywhere. Why are they going to make a change now? Yzerman probably would prefer a higher pick than making a playoff run and getting bounced in five games. So I don't think Jeff Blashill's job is in trouble, but we've got to talk about it because every time they lose, especially consecutively, it just seems like something's going on there. So Kyle, we'll come to you next. Is there cause for concern on the Red Wings' recent winless streak? And does Jeff Blashill, is he back on the hot seat?
Short answer is no. There is no cause for concern right now. I think you just laid it out perfectly. It's one of those things that they had been overachieving this season. They have been, punching above their weight class. So they really have been, coming out and performing really well. And the rest of the league has taken notice. And now they're not getting, thinking of teams coming in, looking at them like, okay, this might be kind of a breeze through game. They're actually taking a little more seriously. And I think we all kind of expected them to kind of regress to this spot and be a mediocre team. We all talked about this in the offseason, how the Wings were going to be in quote unquote purgatory this season. And right now they showed to be above that. So I think we all kind of expected this to happen. Maybe we didn't expect it all to happen at one time within a seven game span, but like you said, they're shutting down the top lines. Our rookies are no longer producing at the rate they had been producing, and you can see the obvious lack of depth that the Red Wings have right now, and it's just been hurting. Seven goals in seven games is just not going to cut it. I'm surprised they have 4 points in those seven games, because of only having seven goals. And so, I think that when you look at the big picture, you understand that this was bound to happen and there's no cause for concern. To answer your last question about Blashill's job being in jeopardy, I would say I agree with you. No, not this year. Now, if they continue this trend over the next 50 games to finish out the season where they're, only getting about six more victories, then I think you start looking at, is he the one to continue to go on next season? But I think this is just a small skid and not anything to be concerned about.
Makes sense. Devin, coming over to you. Are you concerned about the Red Wings' recent win streak? And does Jeff Blashill need to be looking over his shoulder? What's going on there?
To be honest, I think you both laid out pretty much all the key points for me, so I don't want to be too redundant. The thing that I want to mention, at least for myself, that is troublesome is that this team doesn't look like they know what they are, or at least how what style they're supposed to play, I guess is what I'm getting at here. We talked about last season how they kind of just played a bend don't break style, just stick into games and try to squeak it out at the end. And then in the first 20 games or so of this season, they were kind of playing run and gun, and they were just free flowing, high scoring. And, obviously Lucas Raymond was almost scoring at will. And they're not doing that anymore. And I'm not really sure they're not doing either of those styles now. They're kind of in a weird middle ground there where they can't figure out whether they're supposed to be playing all defense or all offense. And I think that's kind of part of why everyone looks so confused right now. They just aren't really sure what where their attention is focused right now. So I'd like to see that get cleaned up before we get too far into this conversation.
And what about Blash? Any concern for Blash and his job status?
Again, like you guys, I pretty much agree with what both of you said. I think Kyle said it perfectly, where not this season, unless things really fall off here over the next month or two or three. Eisenman doesn't strike me as the kind of guy who makes a change just to make a change. He's going to be very purposeful with that move. It's a big move to make. So if he's doing that, it's going to be the right guy at the right time. And I don't know that that is in the middle of this season.
Yep. So we'll be, maybe we can have Iggy back on and see when Igor Larionov is,
when his dad has his contract up.
yeah. That might be a good thing, but, well, hey, really good points. Appreciate the perspective. Not the most fun topic to kick off with. So let's talk about something fun. And Devin or Kyle, I don't remember who said it, but Dylan Larkin, All-Star Game nod. Congrats to the captain, because it's well-deserved. I know we've all been very happy for him with kind of his turnaround season pulling for him. Debatably, he was taking a lot of heat in the past few years. So, my question is pretty simple. Do you agree or disagree with Dylan Larkin's All-Star selection? And again, just to lay it out for you at home really quick, Larkin this year, 32 points in 33 games as of the time of this recording, split literally as evenly as you could be, 16 goals, 16 assists, 54% win margin in the faceoff, got Corsi and Fenwick scores both over 50%, 54 and 53 respectively, and he's a plus three. And you guys know I'm not wild about plus minus, but the reason I bring that up, because this is the first time that he has been plus since his first season in the league. He's finished every year with a minus, and he might still this year. There's a lot of hockey to be played, and they're not a great team. But I think it's a testament to where they are at this point in the season that he's one of the few that's still in the plus side of things. And obviously a well-rounded defensive game. So, all right. Enough throwing stats at you. I just kind of wanted to frame it up, if you will. And we're going to start with Devin this time. So Devin, Larkin, All-Star, good, bad, indifferent. What do you take from it?
That's great. And the key, so going back to last week's episode, Kyle, when you gave him a shout out as your pick to go on, I wholeheartedly agree with your reasonings why. And, you know, here we are today and he is an All-Star, and I agree with it. The thing that sticks out to me as to why I'm excited for him is that this, realistically, this might be his last opportunity to be the Red Wings All-Star, because next year, Raymond's going to be better. Next year, Sider's going to be better. Simon Edvinson might be on the team. Maybe even Alex Nedeljkovic is the Red Wings representative next year. So I feel like, no disrespect to Dylan, but I honestly think this might be the last time he's an All-Star. So I'm glad that he's getting this opportunity. I'm sure he's going to have a lot of fun.
That is a fresh perspective, and I love it. And oddly optimistic, even though it doesn't sound like a good thing. That's phenomenal. Good stuff. Kyle, over to you. Your thought on Dylan Larkin's selection to the All-Star team? Deserved? Would you have taken somebody else? What say you?
Oh, I think absolutely was deserved. And I would, again, point our listeners to go back to last week's episode, because I feel like I don't think I could remake an argument as well as I did last week about why he should be there. And so I don't even want to try. No, I just think this is perfect. And Devin just brought it up as well. You know, we have such a good young core of players coming up that are already up. We have so many more in the literal and figurative wings. You know, one person you even mentioned was Jonathan Berggren, who could end up becoming another Lucas Raymond type player. You know, we don't know what's going to happen yet. And so I think you're absolutely right. And we've talked about this many times. Larkin is truly a second line center playing a first line role. And I think that's why you see he's in the negative column a lot more than than, you know, when he was a younger rookie playing with a lot more veterans in that first line role. But I think, you know, he needed this type of bounce back season. He's proven that he's had this bounce back season. And I believe that this All-Star nod is what is deserved and absolutely, you know, warranted moving forward.
15 points to Kyle for the Jonathan Bergman reference right there. So good stuff, really good perspective. We're going to stay on the happy topic and move forward to the perfect human. But before we do, speaking of perfect, don't forget to sign up for the Hockey Writers Morning Skate at morningskate.io. Ow. So you don't miss the best daily hockey newsletter on the planet. And it's delivered each weekday at 8 a.m. sharp. Be the first to know what's happening in your world of hockey. So how's that for a segue? Now we're going to go back and talk about the one, the only Nicklas Lidström, one of the greatest defensemen to ever play the game. And he is now back with the Red Wings. So, you know, obviously the announcement for me, and I don't know if I'm out of the loop because I'm more dialed in with the Coyotes these days or what, but the announcement was a shocker. Mm-hmm. To me in a good way, but I just didn't see it coming. I didn't even know that was in the cards. So the Iser plan taking full shape yet again, and Nicklas Lidström joining the team. And so the question here is, what will Nicklas Lidström truly bring to the Red Wings front office and the team in general? And before we go on, Kyle, you held yourself accountable over your microphone earlier. I need to hold myself accountable for actually the piece that I put out our Red Wings Weekly, because I left a glaring omission out where, and Tav, I'm talking about you. Thanks for calling me out in the comments. I really do appreciate it. I mean that, because I was talking about defensive prospects that would benefit from Lindstrom's arrival. And I was talking about obviously Moritz Seider, and then I started kind of talking about Johansson and William Wallander, but I left kind of a big name out of there, and that would be Simon Edvinson, who will obviously also benefit. That's what we in journalism call burying the lead. And one to always hold myself accountable and kind of have a little fun. You know, we don't take ourselves too seriously here. Tav, thanks for calling that out. I knew when I was writing it, I knew there was something lacking. And I'm glad you called that out. I really am. So that said, resetting, and we're going to start with you this time, Kyle. Nicklas Lidström, what do you expect with his arrival back in Hockey Town?
Perfection. I mean, he is just this is just the best hire. Red Wing fans, the Red Wing organization, it was the perfect hire. I believe the Morning Skate had that in their
well done
last night's news.
Well done.
But yeah, I mean, I mentioned a little bit before, you know, Nicklas Lidström was just the quintessential defenseman. I mean, he played the game the right way. He was always in the right position. Mm-hmm. You never noticed him, and that's what you want as a defenseman. He moved the puck. He could shoot the puck with purpose. He found seams. He just had the ice vision, like everything you could want in a player. That was Nick Lindstrom. And so he's going to come into this organization, bringing his leadership abilities, bringing his 20 years of NHL experience, his multiple years of international experience, and he's going to help these kids just grow up right before our eyes. We think Moritz Seider is one of the most mature defensemen already. Just wait until he sits down with his meetings with Lindstrom and they discuss future plans for 2 years out, 5 years out. You know, he is just going to turn into this even more well-molded machine, and it's going to be insane to watch. And then, like you said, you have Johansson and Wallander and Edvinson coming up through Sweden, who grew up idolizing Lindstrom. Like you have to assume that was their hero growing up, and now they get to have him on speed dial throughout any type of slump that they might have, or any type of uncertainty that they might have as they're making that transition to North American hockey.
Yeah. So,
I just want to say, like, I was on the Hockey Writers podcast on Wednesday. So if you're listening on iHeartRadio and whatnot, go check that out. And we talked about the hire there. And it was just, you know, if you want to hear a little more of my insight, go back and listen to that. But yeah, I think he is going to be just absolutely what Detroit needs for the long term.
Yeah, good stuff. And something interesting about Lidstrom, he was never the fastest skater in the game. And you saw him through actually different generations of hockey, right? Obviously in the 90s, but then you look even, you know, heading in, he played with the Canes and the Tazes. And what you always find interesting, it wasn't his speed. Kyle, you called it. It was his positioning. It was his hockey IQ. And that, to me, it was just always super impressive. So, Devin, over to you. Your thoughts on Nicholas Lidstrom and what will he bring to the organization?
Two things come to mind. One, I've talked about this a couple times on the show before, but you know, one of the things that I love about this organization is that they always bring their people back and put them in a position to help out this organization into the long term. I think it's so cool that Steve Yzerman and Nick Lidstrom are essentially calling the shots for the Red Wings now. You got Pat Verbeek there too. Chris Draper's the head of scouting. I mean, if if you were like a fan growing up in the 90s and early 2000s, and then you from now came back from the future and told yourself that these guys are going to be then leading the team into the next age. Come on. How cool is that? Like,
oh yeah,
absolutely.
It's the perfect hire for a lot of reasons. And that's one of them. The other thing is I feel like Lidstrom might be in a position to kind of be Hawk and Anderson's successor. You know, obviously Anderson's kind of been the Red Wings Uber scout there over in Europe and Sweden specifically. He's, you know, he found Datsyuk, he found Zetterberg. I think that Lidstrom having a key thing here, I should say before I go on, is that Lidstrom's staying in Sweden, at least for the time being. He's staying in Sweden. So he's going to have his foot on the ground. He's going to be going to these games. He's going to be watching Edvinson. He's going to be watching Vero, Wallander, all those kids. But he's also going to be watching kids that are coming up in the draft. And I have to think that Nick Lidstrom knows a good hockey player when he sees one. So, you know, when they're on the draft floor and they're in the, you know, they're looking at a European guy that Lidstrom has seen, you know, they're going to ask him, what do you think of this kid? Mm-hmm. And not only does he have the insight to know that this player is good, he also should be able to tutor, like, you know, as Kyle said, be a tutor for these kids and help them develop. He's going to be able to help this team, not just from a roster building aspect, but also just a team development aspect. He knows what it takes to win. He knows what makes a good player a good player. And I have I'm very excited to see what he brings to the table in his new role.
Absolutely. And it has to be said, the joke needs to be made, at 51 years old, he could probably still be part of the Red Wings defense right now, to be honest.
Eisenman's joke.
Yeah. And I mean,
we can talk about the team
Snyder's partner and wouldn't even notice he left.
I mean, you know, that's always the joke. And frankly, that's been the running joke since he retired for years and years.
Yeah.
And it's true though. His positioning, his hockey IQ is so great that wouldn't surprise me. if he played well, but we're dealing in a world of hypotheticals. So good perspective. I want to move on because we're going to get back to an oldie, but a goodie that we haven't done in a while. And that's our comment corner section. So we have got a few comments. We got a lot of comments actually from our last show, but always thank you. You know, we appreciate it. So we're going to go first to our old friend, good friend of the show, Paradox Destroyer. Hi, Paradox. Here's the question. Kyle's boy, Adam Ernie. he's 47 goals short of 50 on the year, by the way.
got like 50 games.
Halfway there. but in all seriousness, Paradox wants to know, what's with Adam Ernie? Can he potentially be trade bait this year? Again, just I'll give you guys some context. I already mentioned he's got 3 goals and 6 assists in 37 games, and he's a Pat's stat hated, most hated stat, minus 14. Corsi 42.6%. So we're not possessing the puck a lot while he's on the ice, and he's making $2.1 million a year this year and next year before he becomes an unrestricted free agent. So with that in mind, Paradox wants to know, is Adam Ernie trade bait? Do you think Yzerman could get anything for him, and what's going on? Devin, we'll start with you.
You don't know that he's trade bait this year because he's struggling. And if you're trading him, you're trading him for like a 4th round pick. And I guess if you want to open up the roster spot or, you know, whatever, I mean, a fourth round pick isn't terrible, but like, is, you know, that's not going to change your franchise. The thing about this is obviously Ernie kind of got a little extra spotlight last year because he led the team in goals with 11. Yep. 11, not 20, not 30, 11. If you lead the team in goals with 11, your team sucked at scoring goals. Adam Ernie wasn't some offensive dynamo last year. He just was the best out of the worst. Like, let's call it like
that's
it is.
So true.
So, oh my so gosh. For him to be struggling offensively this year, honestly, it shouldn't be that much of a surprise because he's never been like a world beater offensively. He just happened to have that distinction last year. I do think he has more to give, but he's being played in a defensive role this year. You know, he's kind of on that checking line with Namestnikov and Rasmussen. So they're not on the line to score. They're on the line to just keep the puck in the offensive zone or just not get scored on. Would I like to see more from Ernie? Absolutely. If anything, just to raise his trade value. But I'm not holding my breath on it or about it because that's just not what he's being asked to do right now.
Yep. Makes sense. Makes sense. Kyle, going over to you, your boy, Adam Ernie. You called it 50 goals, maybe 60. You might have said 60 before the season started. I don't remember.
We're going to be saying 70 by the end of the year.
But in all seriousness, Adam Ernie, good. What do you make of the season? And do you think Yzerman can get anything for him?
Well, Pat, with roughly 45 games left in the season, there's still a chance he couldn't make it.
It's true. You're telling me there's a chance.
I don't even remember how we got to that, but let me tell you about the coldest of cold takes ever, because wow, it was, I'm not even close. So I think Devin brought it up absolutely perfectly. His role with this team is not to be the goal scorer. That's obviously, you know, Bertuzzi, Larkin, Raymond on that top line, and then whoever's being plugged in on that second line. Ernie's kind of just a plug and play player down in the bottom six to kind of, you know, hold their other team at bay and then get some depth scoring when he can. As we discussed earlier in the show, you know, with 7 goals in the last 7 games, Detroit's just not getting any scoring, whether it's from their top lines or their depth. Yeah. So to expect him to be, you know, a 15, 20 goal scorer again, I think is what I actually said. If we go back to the tape.
No, for sure. You said
I honestly don't remember. It's been
no, you said 15, last, like, 15, and I was like 50.
Yeah. That's right. Okay. That's right. I was like, it's been so long. Like,
well, Kyle can't even remember our inside jokes, for crying
out. I blocked it out. It's because it's so cold, man. It's frozen up there.
He's trying to forget about it. Okay.
Yes. Push it out. But no, he's in that depth role and he's being asked to do a lot more of a shutdown than the depth scoring. Although, you know, we'd love to see him have more depth scoring, but at this point we'll take any scoring from the Red Wings. You know, the minus 14 is a tough stat. It means he's just out there when they're scoring. It doesn't necessarily mean he's playing bad. I think when you look at that, you got to look more at the Corsi and the Fenwick, which I believe is not horrible, but it's, you know, obviously we want it to be great.
Well, yeah, Corsi, I already said Corsi is 42.6.
42. So that's not horrible, but it's not good, but I mean, like, it's just, I feel like it, the way he's kind of like being portrayed now, right now, you're thinking like he's at like a 38, 39, and it's not that low, you know? And so it's just the whole team is struggling right now. It's not just him. And anyway, to wrap this up, I think, Devin, you said it right. The only way that you're going to trade him right now is to open up a roster space, because you're really not going to get much return unless he starts picking it up and scoring more goals. So I think you hold on to him. Maybe you look to get him in a package deal over the summer when you can say, you know, a change of scenery might do him good on the last year of his contract. But I think in terms of at the deadline, he's going to be staying put.
Makes sense. So, last question of the day, and we are running short on time, so I ask you gents to keep your answers concise. But another good friend of the show, Katz Culo Jackson, and Katz, I got to give you a shout out because you commented over on Howlers and Growlers as well, and I appreciate that. So thank you. brings up Detroit's power play or weaker play or whatever you want to call it. I already mentioned they failed to score on a 6-on-3 against Winnipeg on Thursday night. And they are coming in at a clip of 14.02%. Montreal is the only team worse, 11%. Detroit's penalty kill, not great either, 77.67%, good for 24th in the league. Just for a little context, last year, Detroit's power play was 11.41%, again, compared to 14 this year. So marginally better this year.
Improvement.
And then their penalty kill last year was 78%, and again, this year, 77. So again, right there. So really, when you look at it in the grand scheme of things, not a whole lot of change. So Katz wants to know, what can be done to address the Red Wings power play? And I'll give a quick answer really quick. I don't think there's anything that can be done. I think you're seeing the same results because you're seeing a lot of the same roster. I know there have been some new players, but I don't think it's down to coaching at this point. I think it's down to execution. They had a lot of chances on that 6-on-3 and just couldn't get the puck, find the puck in the net. And I don't think there's any quick fix other than getting more talent on the roster, in my opinion. Why it's slightly higher? One word, two words, more exciter, in my opinion. So I now yield the floor. Kyle, we're going to come to you next. Detroit's power play, next to last in the league. Can anything be done to fix it?
I think you're right when you say that there's not a whole lot that can be done because it's pretty much the same roster. But in the same sentence, I think the team could, be a lot better if they had a little more structure. So what I mean by that is what they're doing on their power play right now just isn't working. So they need to set up into a new system or a new structure within the power play and find a new look to throw at the defense. I think it was two games ago when Bertuzzi scored on the power play, basically the first 30, 45 seconds was just them cycling in the zone, throwing pucks into people's legs because they couldn't find the seam. And then all of a sudden Hronik, found that seam, I think it was against San Jose, behind Burns and hit Bertuzzi on the backdoor tip. And basically it was just a broken play for like 40 seconds that resulted into an open lane and Detroit got lucky pretty much. So I think with the lack of structure right now or the lack of executing on the structure that they play out of has been their biggest downfall.
So I think that's fair. However, Dan Bylsma was shown the door. Alex Tanguay comes in, and that was supposed to bring that structure in. I mean, maybe that's what you get for hiring a former player of the Colorado Avalanche. Some food for thought there. So, Devin, your thoughts on Detroit's power play, and can anything be done to fix it? And you got the last word of the show.
Two things. One, I think you knocked it out of the park, Pat, when you mentioned Cider being more or less the reason why the power play is a little bit better this year. I think he's been the most consistent contributor on that power play. Sometimes players are doing well. They're getting good shots off. Sometimes they're retrieving the puck well. Sometimes they're moving it around well. You can always count on Cider being on that point, though, and facilitating play, keeping the puck in, or doing his damnedest to do it, and then quickly getting it back in the zone when it does exit. I think he's been phenomenal as the quarterback on the power play. Looking forward to see him mature in that role more. The other thought I have, I think for the most part, what you see is what you get. It's not like they have some like smoking gun, some ace up their sleeve they haven't used yet. They've pretty much like what you see is what you get. I do think that they can, they should adopt a different mindset on the power play. I think that I'd love to see them go like five games where they just kind of go, let's get to 40 shots today. Screw the score. Let's not even worry about it. Let's get 40 shots on net. Make the goalie work. And you can do that on the power play by just unloading anything and everything. This problem has persisted for years now, but they always look for that perfect play and they always go for it, even if it's not there. And I think You just need to drop that mindset and just start getting pucks on net. Even if it doesn't lead to anything, it can build momentum. It can build confidence. Yep. There's no reason not to get the puck on net. That's absolutely the only thing I can think of to change things. Because like we've already said, you're not going to plug in Adam Ernie and then all of a sudden get 20 power play goals.
Exactly. Exactly. So I guess the answer to the question is there is no easy answer to this question. Mm-hmm. And it'd be nice to see them tally a few more, but be patient. That will come in time. I don't think Alex Tanguay was the answer, but I also don't necessarily think he's the problem in this scenario either. So really good stuff, gents. That's 2 weeks in a row. It was great. And you at home, in case we haven't convinced you with our first two plugs, sign up for Morning Skate. Get that newsletter. You'll get to relive some of Wes McCauley's most legendary moments as a referee. It's the kind of content that puts a smile on your face. So make sure you go join the fun at morningskate.io. That is our show. Thank you so much for joining us as always. We cannot wait to see you again next week. Cheers.